He may be more prejudiced, but I think we have to make a distinction between racism and bigotry. Racism, this is a racist nation. I am a racist and you are a racist because we have had the advantage from the day we were born. Now, we're not bigots. I've been educated out of that or converted out of it or whatever, and maybe you never knew it, but I did. I'm not a bigot, but I'm still a racist because my tribe still has the power and seems determined to hang on to that power, as I think humans always will, which then leads to another very important point, I think, and I'm being very pessimistic about the nature of what we used to call the nature of man till the sisters taught us better, but what human beings are about, self-loving, self-preserving, that's all the theologians ever meant by original sin, that we think more highly of ourselves than we do of the other person than we ought to, despite what Isaiah and Jesus and the prophets and all of them told us, but we go on doing that. And we don't seem able to break out of that. And therefore, I think, and I'm always very reluctant to always have been, to say to another group, here's what you ought to do. You know, as a white person, I can't say to black America, look, here's what you ought to do. I can say, though, as a human being, throughout history, this has been the way it has been. So, if you recognize that all people are self-concerned, self-loving, self-preserving, all people and all institutions are that, then it becomes obvious that the only way this cycle is going to be broken is black people do it themselves. Now, this sounds like one hell of a cop-out, but I just yesterday reading about Joseph Davis, who was the brother of Jefferson Davis. Mm-hmm. Joseph Davis, ideologically, far, far from Jefferson. They didn't even get along, actually. Mm-hmm. Joseph Davis did have as best friend Benjamin Montgomery, who was a slave. Well, why didn't he free him? He could have, but then free in that context, free to do what? Instead of that, Benjamin Montgomery became first the bookkeeper. When he first there at 15 years old, he ran away. And Davis said, why did you run away? And he began to chronicle all of the evils of the system itself. And Joseph Davis said, well, how would you feel if that wasn't the case here? And so Joseph was an educated, voracious reader. And so he would read books, and then this young man would read the books, and they would sit out in the cool of summer evenings or by flickering firelight in his library in the wintertime and discuss these books, philosophy, poetry, history, mathematics. Their interest knew no bounds, and soon their friendship knew no bounds. Now, to cut the story short.
That's okay.
After the Civil War, Joseph Davis sold Davis Bend Plantation, which had been occupied because it was the key to the capture of Vicksburg. It was occupied for 2 years by the feds. The Freedmen's Bureau tried a grandiose, altruistic, for sure, utopian kind of community there. It failed, just as the farm that I'm trying to write about down there, the Providence Farm, failed, a similar venture. But then one of the sons of Joseph Davis sold the plantation to his former slave for considerably less than he could have got on the market. Benjamin Montgomery and his family moved into the big plantation.
He sold it to Montgomery.
He sold it to Montgomery following the Civil War.
Uh-huh.
And Montgomery and his family lived there. One of his sons then later was really the founder, and this is a exceedingly abbreviated version, Mound Bayou, which was another.
Uh-huh.
It succeeded. It succeeded. Well, why did it succeed?
Mount Bayou, an all-black community.
An all-black community. It succeeded then as a somewhat utopian community. It succeeds today. Well, why did it succeed? Because no one was saying, well, the whites are going to do something for us. The federal government is going to do something for us. The same thing has happened, is happening now with Indians. It happened with the Choctaws, and I've been writing about this. They have succeeded in Lowndes County, Mississippi, because the new chief said, we can sit around here waiting for the next Bureau of Indian Affairs check till doomsday. We're still going to have 78% unemployment. He went to work. he's pretty much corrected that situation. Now, it sounds like the same old white garbage to say to black people, you got to do this yourself. All I'm saying is, I'm not telling them what to do, I'm just telling them what white people are like and mm-hmm. what human nature is like. That if ever it's going to be done with, for any of us, you know that.
Yeah.
It has to be done by them.
You say now,
that sounds like a cop-out.
No, you're saying you can't bank on the white guy because the very nature of the situation is
so. Not going to do it.
And therefore they, so how, that comes back to the self-help again. You don't mean, this leads to the question of separatism integration.
No, I'm not talking about that.
No.
I think now we really are talking about economics when I said earlier that that integration means nothing to the black ghetto kid or the white ghetto
who
kid.
Who doesn't have the buck to go into that restaurant.
Who can't go into that restaurant
yeah.
or who can't join the Burning Tree golf club or whatever. It's meaningless. And it seems to me this is another part of the system of how we maintain segregation, just as I think the cynical thing that George Bush is doing right today is part of the I'm not even saying George Bush is consciously aware of this. He probably is not. And yet that's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have to have a black on that Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
That is the given, all right? We must have one. Here's one.
Mm-hmm.
Who marches to our tune.
I remember you and that before I ask you your feelings what to do, you've already said, you've offered hints and more than hints. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, you in a previous conversation, I was looking over, you were saying it's great to have the pom-pom girls, black and white, cheering the integrated football teams.
Yeah.
But there in the hot sun, you have poor black and poor white.
Yeah.
Being rednecky, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sweat and all that, and you have... Yeah, we read of that, of Bill Cosby and of Jordan and all the others, you know.
Oh, sure.
But now we come to the great many, and so, well, I suppose someone say, what about full employment? What about a program of similar to the, say, New Deal programs of the 30s and 40s?
Well, Studs, I have no quarrel with that, but I remember the New Deal programs, and the programs that were designed by Franklin Roosevelt, and I was a great admirer of his at the time, and we thought, you know, my father and we thought that Franklin Roosevelt was just waiting around for one member of the Trinity to die off so he could join the Godhead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you look at those programs, one after another, and they started paying my daddy, and God knows that check for $46.48 looked mighty big back in the mid-30s to pay us not to plant cotton. But what happened? It was appropriated by the gentry. So now you're paying Jim Eastland, I think it was a half a million or three-quarters of $1 million, whatever, one year, not to do something that he didn't intend to do anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't...
What do you see, then, as the out? You, Will D. Campbell, are...